could start off by saying, my name is?
My name is Melissa Saulfield.
And we never ask people their ages, but give us your date of birth so we can put
it. Oh, so you can use math?
No. So we can put it in a historic
February 24th, 1952.
Okay. And if you would start out, tell us about your people and where you were raised.
I was raised in the West. I was an original Valley girl. I was born in beautiful downtown Burbank. And my father and mother had settled in the Valley, San Fernando Valley, after World War II. And, you know, at a time when the Valley was really full of orange groves and horses and animals and beautiful fruit trees. And that's what I grew up until I was nine. And we moved to Idaho for a couple of years and moved to Alabama. I lived in Alabama in 1963, which I felt was probably the most formative year of my life, certainly a huge impact on our country. But I was there, of course, the year that Kennedy was assassinated, but also that school year was delayed because George Wallace had stood in the steps of the University of Alabama, didn't want James Meredith to enter the school, and so all schools across the state were held, I think, 3 or 4 days. We had no school. It used to be called a nigger lover. I mean, it was a real eye-opener for a kid. I was 11 when we first moved there. Then we moved to Colorado, and then I went to college in the state of Washington. And right after that, I moved east. So I moved to Massachusetts in 1974. I moved to Concord, 82-83, because I was going to get married. I married here in Concord, and we had our ceremony in the Concord Academy Chapel. And I've been here ever since, and I believe I have died and gone to heaven. I do think Concord is an amazing community. Some people who don't live here will say they think it's a kind of a snob community, but I don't think that at all. There is some wealth here, if that's what they're referring to, but it's not near what some of our surrounding communities are, you know, Weston. You're not familiar with this area, but it is an abundance of riches, intellectual riches, historical riches, natural resources, and the community spirit here to do good and continue to work on the community's behalf is just astounding to me. So, and that's probably why I'm being interviewed, because you come in here, you want to find something to do, and you just get sucked in, and it doesn't seem like work. The library being the most important place for that I have volunteered my time, and this room has a lot of meaning. I became a friend of the library in 80-something, early 80s, 84, and I was vice president of the Friends, and then I was asked to become a trustee in 1987, and was a trustee until I resigned because I felt it was time to get off the board. I could have stayed there until I died, but I thought it's time to let other people have the opportunity.
Let me put this here so we can,
And the most important thing I believe I've done for the library, I was the head of the library, started in 1998, and when we raised, with some terrific community support, $8 million and redid this building. So I don't know how familiar you are, if anyone's talked to you about that. There used to be in this, where the circulation desk, right across from that, there used to be the stairway that went up to the stacks. That was the central core of the library, which we, in working with the architect, realized if we took that out, we could add another wing over now where we have our periodicals and open up the whole central core of the library and improve flow, increase space, and solve a lot of the spatial problems that we had, and as well as electrical mechanical issues that we had. So we air conditioned the whole building. We didn't have that before. We redid the basement, which most people said was a sow's ear. We turned into a silk purse, and. That project, I was the head of the library at the time and was kind of the chief fundraiser, although we had a wonderful committee of trustees and a very fine development director part-time, and we succeeded in achieving that. So what you see here is this the beautiful result. We do tend to clutter everything up. This is a library. But, you know, he's kind of stripped some of the trash away. It really is, it's very beautiful.
We think so too. We're just stunned to be in a place like that.
So I think to me, the library has is the center of community life in this town. It seems all things kind of come back and then emanate from, or at least that's what we would like to think. But I think it's actually very true. We try to be very collaborative with other institutions in the community, other nonprofits, but also the businesses and private individuals. So that's why I feel that my work on behalf of the library is doing the work of the angels and God. And I like the spirit of the librarians because, I think of free access to information as a kind of the cornerstone of our democracy, and it's important that we keep it healthy. This town has. I think this town truly embraced the library. You want to just keep rambling? You can ask me a question.
We're going to forward this to the Chamber of Commerce and see if we can.
Well, I've worked with them on different projects. I have, in the time I've been here, I felt that my career has really been the town of Concord, not so much any of my jobs. I mean, I have a master's in art history, and I started into a PhD, but I realized I needed to have little kids and probably had to get a job. So at that time, I went to work at Wellesley College, but have always, the library has always sort of been the most important thing I feel I've done, aside from raising my kids. And so that every job I've had, I've always tried to keep a volunteer role in the library. I now am on the library committee. The library committee is it's appointed by the selectmen, and we represent the interests of the taxpayers and work with the library director and the trustees as well, and certainly in the Friends. So I do that, and I also and participate with the Friends. I organize an authors series. We try to getting some more programming underway on behalf of the library for the community. So I do that. And maybe should direct a question. I've on the board of Orchard House. That's another partner sort of. Orchard House is, you know, the home of the Alcotts. When I first met the man I am married to, he was did pro bono legal work for them. I did that for many years, and so it's sort of nice to come. I was on the corporation for the Orchard House many years ago, and now I'm on the board. It's the little engine that could. It is an amazing little organization that's 100 years old in 2011. Truly represented the same kind of spirit that I see here in the library and in Concord, that people who care very deeply about an institution will band together and fight to keep it thriving and whole. Because Orchard House could easily have just, you know, either been sold off and the land and the house destroyed, but people from that era cared very deeply that it be preserved. I think Harriet Lothrop, who wrote Five Little Peppers, Margaret Sidney, I don't know if you're familiar with, but she was a Concordian, one of the early preservationists, and she was a part of the larger group that preserved this, the larger group including the members of the Alcott family, the Pratts.
Roughly, what period are you speaking of?
When they did that, well, 100 years ago. So, because there, I don't know if you've had any opportunity really to look around Concord, but where the Orchard House, which is currently preserved, is next door to the Wayside, what we, the National Park Service, will call the Wayside. In Louise's day, it was called Hillside, and actually that was the home. Where she lived, that informed many of her early stories, like Little Women. It later became the home of Harriet Lothrop, and she was very interested in preserving it and worked with the members of the Pratt family and others to raise the money and care for the property. And there has been a member of that family, the extended family, a part of it since then. I think there always will be if we keep. I think they have sons who are the treasurers. So the current treasurer today is a member of the extended family from the Alcott. So,
can you tell us a little bit about the house and
well, Orchard House?
Yes.
Well, you probably have much better from Jan Turnquist, who is whom you've interviewed. She is the current director. and has been associated with Orchard House, geez, I 30 years or something. Another person I hope that you do interview is Jane Gordon, or you may already have.
Yesterday.
Yeah, she's a truly amazing person. No one knows history better than Jane.
She's fabulous.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, and she was the director of Orchard House when I first came to Concord. And I've worked with her there, here, the Minuteman National Park. You know, she is obviously now she's at the Mass Historical, but Jane is, I don't know, to me, the sort of unofficial historian of Concord. She knows everything. And she probably told you, she teaches the Concord Guide class in the spring, which I have taken a couple of times, because I don't retain it. If you don't use it, you don't retain it. So I've taken it with Jane and I with a woman who used to give the class many years ago. Yeah, Jane knows everything. So I wouldn't even try to tell you anything about Orchard House because Jane and Jan know more. Another place I have worked, though, which adds to my knowledge of the community, is Minuteman National Park. I was kind of recruited to work there in 2000 by Nancy Nelson, who is the current superintendent. I had met her for some fact finding or I don't know some can't remember the anyway. I had met her and she was interested in having me come help her and work on kind of the PR side for Minuteman, which, as you may or may not know, the only way into Hanscom Field, which abuts Minuteman National Park, is through the original portions of the original Battle Road. So it has been an ongoing battle to this day to preserve the park and seek some kind of accommodation with Hanscom Airfield. There has been the commercial side is owned by Massport, and there are people within the Massport community who would like to have seen, or it's our belief, an expanded Hanscom. It may be that they just wanted to make it appear that they wanted to expand Hanscom so they could get that third runway at Logan Airport. This is a controversy you probably know nothing about, but it's been a battle on behalf of the Minuteman National Park for a number of years, and a lot of volunteers in the community have worked very, very hard, sunk a lot of time, effort, and money to countering the efforts of Massport to expand Hanscom commercial base. There's also an Air Force presence there, but they, I think, represent something like 1% of the air traffic, so the issue has always been commercial. At any rate, so I worked with Nancy Nelson and other community groups to promote the park and its magnificent resources and its history and to counter the effects of, you know, big bad Massport. So I did that for about 5 years. And while I was there, that's the same period when I was the head of the library trustees and we raised the money to rebuild this.
Are you bionic?
No, I just can't sit still. But I also, you know, I wouldn't say I don't have a career. You know, I haven't stayed at any one place that long because I'm interested, and these jobs interest my mind and my heart. And, you know, I don't get paid much. But you get paid in other ways. And, it's all been on behalf of, really, of Concord. And, an exceptional community, as I've said.
What does the Minuteman Park mean to you in terms of,
well,
as a landscape, what does it mean to you?
Well, first of all, when I grew up in Southern California, my favorite period, I've always been interested in history, my favorite part of American history was the Revolution. I don't know why, I was out there with Father Sarah, you know, and the missions of California, but I just was always intrigued and attracted to the history. You know, Johnny Tremaine was one of my favorite books as a kid. So when I came east and I lived in Boston, one of the things I would do to occupy my weekends would be to go out and trek around the different historic sites. And I had never really made it to Concord, and actually until I married and moved out here. And it just so happens that where I live is about a quarter mile from the North Bridge. So virtually every day of my life here, I have walked up there. I have dogs, and they have to be walked. And it always seems that mom's the one who does it. So my kids never did it. I've always done it. So I have gone up there every day all these many years and watched this efforts at preserving the park, expanding the park. Over the years, it has grown and taken on more land. That's been a controversial issue, which I suspect you may have interviewed some people, or you should, or will. In the creation of the park, you know, they did through a variety of means take land. I mean, they fairly compensated the people, but it's still, you know, they were kind of pushed out to attempt to reclaim a fair amount of the land that was around the North Bridge where the battle occurred, and the land along the road, which is probably the most important part because it's the road where most of the battle ensued. I mean, that's the bloody part of it. Not much happened at the 2 to 5 minute skirmish at the bridge, really. It was at Miriam's Corner on the way when the British were marching back to Boston, where area minute and militia companies came together, and what they say, they set the hook for the revolution. So that land is where it all happened, and you kind of can't replace the genuine article. So that's what I have become to appreciate by going up to walk across the bridge, walk across the fields where these very simple, hardworking, some were hardworking, some were not, but early settlers here in Concord, where they lived, where they died, where they raised their kids and plowed the fields. It's, you know, just imagining what it might have looked like then. And the efforts on the part of the National Park Service are to rehabilitate the landscape to reflect somewhat in certain areas where they can what it actually looked like. One of the issues in all that has been, and it's been controversial, is cutting down trees. At the time of the revolution, there were very few trees here because they had cut them either for firewood or they needed to clear the fields. So it was a very different landscape here. While I was working at Minuteman, one of the big issues was cutting a number of the trees, a number of the fields that now if you drove along 2A, which is the battle road, are wide open. You know, 8-10 years ago, they weren't. So, and a lot of people just could not accept the fact that you would cut down a tree. And I think now most people realize that it does help to restore the look of what it must have been like at the time. Oh, you can never, because you still have the highway down the middle. The trees grow back anyway. And at the time, you know, most of Massachusetts was open farmland. There's a fascinating, if you guys ever need time to go do touristing, out at the Harvard Forest, which is out in Petersham, they have exhibits of the landscape of New England over a course of time, and you see at the colonial era that, you know, it was just wide open, not deforested, but just, you know, wide open farm fields. Anyway, it means a great deal to me, and I believe it should be preserved. I feel strongly that the National Park Service, Wallace Degner said, it was one of the best ideas that the American people ever had, which was to create these wonderful national parks. So I'm looking forward to the Ken Burns series this fall. When I was at Minuteman, I did send a proposal into him, hoping that he would pick Minuteman as one of the featured parks, but he didn't. I think his interest is really to show magnificent nature parks, and this is a memorial historical park. It's different.
Pretty magnificent, though.
Well, we think so, but it kind of can't compete with the Grand Canyon or Yosemite. But it's part of this fabulous park system that the United States has, and hope people that do come to see it appreciate it. I think that they do. I have anecdotally heard stories that, you know, after the Tiananmen Square massacre in China, a number of busloads of Chinese came within the next weeks following that to the bridge, because to them it represented resistance and freedom and independence. So it's a touchstone for many more than just Americans. On any given day, if you are up there, you will hear other languages spoken. And I find that even now when I walk the dogs after dinner, that if there's still people lingering in the park, they're often from another country. It's a treat. I think sometimes that the world appreciates some of our sights more than we do.
I hadn't thought about it that way. Interesting.
Well, I worked at Minuteman under the, and I could be very biased here, under the Bush era, when it seemed to me a concerted effort, and not too subtle, to really crush the parks and to open them to extractive technologies and private interests. And I, under the Obama administration, there's a shift back, thank God. It was very disturbing, really disturbing. He could not get out of that office fast enough for me. And you can ask anyone my politics. I think anyone in Concord knows that. I feel very strongly about politics.
So even in your fairly brief time here, since the early 80s, you've seen a lot of changes in the built environment.
I think so. And I was saying, because that's what Leslie said, that would be one of your interests. I wish I'd been, I am very observant, but, you know, over time, you get used to the new change, and you absorb it into your being, and don't remember that downtown we used to have a Woolworths. It might have been the last of the Woolworths. Concord Center has, even though the roads are still the same, a lot of the character of the stores that are available, the kinds of different stores that we have a lot of this sort of boutique-y things now. When I first came here, we did have a Woolworths that did have a little lunch counter. It was around the corner from my husband, has had his law practice here for 30 years. He just shut it down this year. And I was cleaning out his office, and he has an S. And I said, where did this come from? And he said, well, it's the S that came off the Woolworth, the big Woolworth sign. So I'm thrilled that we have it. I suppose in time I probably should donate it to the library's collection. But in the meantime, my last name starts with an S, and I might give it to a kid. But at any rate, miss the old Woolworths. I miss that kind of down-home, very, basic store. Used to be able to buy a pair of socks and underwear in Concord. Now I think the cost of a pair of underwear is about $100, and you buy it at the little French, what do they call it? There's a French store there. I've never been in it. There are a lot of stores I have never been in now. It has changed. The downtown has changed. It's become a little more pricey. Appeals to, as I'm told, the Chestnut Hill and Beacon Hill set for Christmas time when they come to Concord to shop. So I do miss that. I'm hardly the only Concordian that misses being able to buy kind of basics in town. But what hasn't changed is the character of a small New England town that's, I think, is self-conscious about preserving a sense of integrity. I can't imagine it becoming touristy the way I see, Rockport, I should not slam Rockport. I really haven't been there for a while. But one of the things that I learned or observed in growing up in the West, and particularly my time living in Colorado Springs, when to build the business community, they really cultivated the tourist dollar and forgot. That the reason people came out there was to see the beautiful natural resources and the cleanliness of the air, and I felt that they compromised all of that for the sake of a tourist dollar and tchotchkes and ticky-tack. So Concord, I think it has done very effectively is to retain its integrity as a small New England town that serves the people of its town first. We welcome tourists, but the people who live here are more important. And if that starts to change, I will feel we have lost something very important. Because there was a battle in the 80s, battle, maybe that's too strong a word, but if you come Cambridge Turnpike, coming from the east, Route 2, turn left to come into the Concord Center, there's a field that used to have a little tiny kiosk where the Chamber of Commerce welcomed visitors, and they wanted to build a larger structure on the field right across from it to welcome visitors to Concord. And, you know, a number of us were very opposed to that. There's some really very wonderful, outspoken people who worked really very hard to defeat that, because our feeling was that it's a much more welcoming to see an open field than a large building that has, you know, welcome tourist and a bus stop. Although they said they wouldn't have very much parking for buses, still the idea was that, to me, it was the camel's nose under the tent. I didn't want anything to change. You know, keep the open field. If you really want to find, you know, the historic sites within Concord, you'll find them. You know, it may not be as easy as people would like it with more signage, and we have some signage. I mean, but I felt strongly that I didn't want the first thing people to see was a building for tourists. So what the compromise is that down the street, Main Street, sort of back from between the Bank of America and Middlesex Bank, is a little brick building, very tasteful, that houses the welcome center for people to come to Concord. Has restrooms. That was the other issue. Concord never had restrooms for people, so they used to come to the library. So we were grateful from the library's point of view that there are now public bathrooms. That is something that the town kind of missed for many years. Anyway, so my idea here is that I simply want a point in making that I think Concord has retained this wonderful quality of being a whole. I mean, it serves its community. It has this wonderful history, has wonderful natural resources, but it isn't first and foremost a community and not a tourist site. And it's also not, somebody had said to me, well, you just live in a suburb of Boston. And not at all. I mean, this is in and of itself, this is a whole town. It is not a suburb of Boston. You know, people, I think there are people who probably don't go into Boston for years at a time. So.
What about the individual neighborhoods around town?
Yeah.
Have they also maintained their integrity?
Some of them have, kind of. I'm not the best one to answer that because I live on Lowell Road, which is a main thoroughfare from Concord, goes out to Carlisle, and on up eventually into New Hampshire. And it is not a neighborhood. That's been one of my, I'm sorry that I've never lived in a neighborhood. My kids never had, you know, neighbors. And on the other hand, we do live on the Assabet River, and across from us is acres and acres of conservation land. So my vista out my back and around has never changed in 20-some years, almost 30 years, and never will. Because that land is all in conservation. Thank you to a number of folks who raised the money to buy the land when it came up for sale. One of the more interesting communities, and I suspect you may have talked to someone who lives there, is Conantum, or you should, because it was a part of the communities across Route 2, originally created by professors and architects from MIT. Carl Koch was one of the originally was an architect who's passed away, but they built, I guess they're like deck houses. I don't really know the style, but it's pretty consistent throughout. Again, you should ask somebody who really knows what they're talking about, but it was a fascinating community that was created in the early 50s, and I don't think there's any house now that hasn't been somewhat altered. It has begun to change a lot. It's a beautiful properties over there, and a number of this original community homes have been torn down and McMansions put up, which is kind of too bad. But there does seem to be a real sense of community there even to this day. I would assume you probably talked to Barbara Powell. She's the outgoing library director, and she lives there and can tell you a lot about that. The other areas, certainly like West Concord, you know, Jane could talk to you a lot about that. Because I have lived all my life in this, you know, same house, I can't tell you too much about the neighborhoods, honestly. I've seen, just anecdotally, you drive around, you see the tear down. It's always more interesting to me to see someone who adds on to a house or alters a home rather than takes it down and then puts up a much bigger property. But that's progress, the American style. So, Ken, I have a lot of ideas of people that you should interview.
Tell them to Leslie. She's the boss.
I don't know. I worked with Leslie for a long time. I consider her a very good friend and someone who I admire enormously. When she, when I first got involved with the library, the woman before her was not a professional archivist, but she loved the community. And even though I think some of her methodologies were not up to, you know, the professional standards that Leslie has established, because Leslie really is professional and fabulous, that woman preserved a lot of materials. She even went to the town dump and brought papers back that people had thrown out that she knew had value. So we all owe her a debt. But Leslie has been just fabulous. I have over the years thought about helping her create, you know, kind of a Friends of Special Collections to help raise additional money. We never have done that, but while I was a trustee and the current group of trustees feel very strongly in helping support her, everything that she does down there. She's been able to raise money through different kinds of fees for repro rights and that sort of thing, so that she can do certain kinds of repairs. She also writes a lot of grants for some of the materials. But I always have recognized that special collections is one of the things that makes this library unique. Some communities have an historical society. We have special collections, and it is exceptional. I don't know if you've had much opportunity to, you know, root around down there, but it is pretty amazing, the materials that she has. And she's superb, really.
We're impressed.
Oh, she is amazing. And I take it as some kind of compliment that she thinks I'm a friend, because she is one smart woman. And, you know, the town is very, very lucky to have her. I know a lot of places have tried to recruit her away from here, but she's devoted to the place, and we're very fortunate. I mean, I think she could work at any place in the country and be exceptional, so I think we're lucky.
I've heard her refer to herself and to Barbara as the Connecticut girls, the both of them being from Connecticut.
Well, Barbara's not from Connecticut. Barbara's from New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey.
Jersey girls. Yeah.
Jersey girls.
Well, yeah, that would make sense. No, she really is great. So is Barbara. I mean, it's a new era here. I'm sure they've told you that we have a new director. I have known Barbara for many, many years, and there's a connection. I mean, she had known she'd lived in the area my husband was married before, and Barbara, they all lived in the same area. So Barbara had known my husband before I knew him, and her children knew my stepkids. So, you know, there's a lot of interconnection through her, and I've worked very closely with her on every project we've ever done, and not having her here anymore is hard for all of us, because she's just an exceptional person, really incredibly smart, very easygoing, except I know beneath all that she worries about everything. So we're all, you know, concerned. There's a new director, and she's going to be different, but I think that's, you know, it's fine. She's young. We need youth, because not getting any younger. And there are new projects. You know, we're trying to raise money now for the Fowler Library to expand it, and had hoped to have all the money raised and it done before Barbara retired, but didn't quite do that. But very well on our way.
And what will that be, facility be?
Well, it's our branch library. We, for a town this tiny, we do have a branch, the Fowler Branch, and it was originally built in 1929, the year of the crash. That was a project that I was head of the building campaign for that in the mid-90s. We expanded and renovated and created a basement. And so this particular project will be to expand the footprint a little bit more and complete the basement. It's, I think, a very beautiful design. I'm not as involved with that. I was on the building committee, although I have had been sort of tangentially involved. But it's, we felt it's bursting at its seams. I mean, the people use our libraries in this town, and even the Fowler Branch is very busy. There's no room anymore. We have kids programs, adult programs, we have film series. So we had to figure out a way to take advantage of the basement that we had created as the result of the 90s campaign. So that's what's happening. I don't quite know. I think, we need to raise about $4 million. I think we've raised a million something. The trustees have some money that if we do the kind of project that we did when we renovated here, borrow from ourselves to get so that we don't have to go out for financing. I'm not sure. I'm off the board now, but I kind of sort of follow what they do, sort of. But we will succeed, I have no doubt. My job is raising money now. I work at the hospital, and I think that the library is doing better than we are in these troubled times.
Wow. That's a commentary.
Yeah, I mean, the hospital does well, but there's something very special about the library. When you go out to ask for capital needs, the town has responded.
That's terrific.
Yep.
Carrie?
Let's take a little break here. Collect our thoughts.
Yeah, I'm just random.
Talk about that.
No way.
I heard nothing about that.
Oh, well, because there's been a penitentiary here since the mid-19th century. And the workers, the prisoners, have been a part of helping to build part of the community. Today, there are two. There's the really maximum security prison, and then kind of kitty corner from that is the Northeast Correctional Center. So those tend to be, 18 to 21-year-olds who, in possession of marijuana or something. They're not bad guys, typically. My husband has done some work with them, and he once told me that the nurse up there said, usually if they escape, the police wait a couple of days, then they either go to the girlfriend or the parents' home, and the guy's usually there, and then they just bring them back. Their biggest problem, so they have acne or something. They're not bad kids. It's just an awful lot of, some of the drug laws scoop them up and put them in jail when maybe we should come up with some better, way to punish them. At any rate, a lot of those guys, do work, yard work or street work along, so for the deep town, the Department of Public Works will have them. We used to do a volunteer luncheon here at the library, and for a number of years, they would prepare, a tray of like a lasagna or something to contribute to it. That stopped. I don't know if they were afraid that we would return the pen with a knife or something in it. I don't know, but it stopped. I have to ask Barbara why they don't do that anymore. We had some of the prisoners help when we moved back into the library for this most recent expansion. They helped put the books on the shelves. When I worked at, this is another place I worked, very briefly, because it was a wacky scene. But I worked at Fruitlands out here in Harvard. That's an historic site. It was actually Bronson Alcott was out there in the winter of the late 1840s as part of an experiment to live off the land. And you couldn't eat anything, no meat, and nothing that an animal had to help produce. So, Louisa, her family, became the the workers. But anyway, long story. But that's Fruitlands is out there, and I had contacted the superintendent of the Northeast Correctional to help put together a work crew because we were trying to clear some land out there, and they were happy to do it. And I looked out the window, and there were these big, brawny guys with scythes and machetes and the guard, and all the guard had was a can of off. I thought, you know, if anything happens, we could be easily overrun. I mean, they're, you know, these guys are out there just for a couple of years. Anyway, that was just a funny story. But they have, you know, provided labor from time to time. A lot of the families, this is something somebody surely will tell you about the white ladies. They're the white homes that are across the street from the state penitentiary there. A lot of them are gone now, but there had been an effort to preserve them. They were the homes of the guards and the, you know, the, what do they call it, the warden. And there have been efforts over the years to turn those into low-income housing, you know, but then there's an, you know, controversy, never quite worked out. But at any rate, we've had a very nice relationship, I think, over the years with the prison, even though it's maximum security. We've had some pretty bad guys up there, but and every now and then you hear somebody escapes, but they usually find them. But it's been a part of the sort of the commercial aspect, I suppose, of the town for a long time. And it, you know, it's a dominant physical feature if you go west of the town because there is the prison.
Out there on the circle?
Yeah, the Rotary. A number of the churches in the community have worked with prison outreach, you know, to help in the rehabilitation of both the, you know, the tough population and the younger, the, you know, the Northeast Correctional Group. They used to, one of the things the Northeast Correctional used to have its own dairy, which was really very successful. They provided all the milk for the prisons across the state. And then under the Romney administration, Mitt Romney, Governor Romney, they shut it down. And we were all told that it was not successful, but in fact it really was. So I notice now they have cows out there again. Whatever. Anyway, so that, you ought to talk to somebody else about the relationship of the penitentiary to the town of Concord. Usually they quote the population of Concord. They'll say it's 15,000 plus 2,000 prisoners. So it ups our census every now and then.
Has the library ever offered any services to prison?
I think in terms of
circulating books?
I would suspect we do. I think we do. I mean, that's something you need to ask Barbara. I think so. Because I know that they have provided, you know, labor here. I would expect that we do. I mean, that's something you really should ask her. Leslie might know as well. I should know the answer, but I actually don't. I would assume we do. We try to work. I know that the library tries to work with as many community groups as we can, as we can identify. If there's ways to provide access here for them to come here, or for them to improve our internet services so that they, from their own home, can check out books, return books, renew books. We work with, you know, the Council on Aging. Also, try to get speakers from some of the staff will go over to speak, and sometimes we have them come over here. Groups of a book group. If a book group is interested in meeting here from the Council on Aging or any of them, you know, we do that. So there is a lot of effort to try and reach out from the library.
Is there a bookmobile?
We don't have a bookmobile.
Some rural communities, I think.
Yeah, well, partly because, you know, this is very well located for this side of Concord, and then the Fowler branch is right across from where the Council on Aging is, and there's the Minuteman Arc, which is for physically and mentally challenged kids and people. So it's in a very good location for people to reach it. don't know if there's ever really been much of a call for a bookmobile. I don't think we'd need, I think we're small enough and these are accessible enough. Don't know.
But the prison,
and it may well be, because I mean, I know for years there has been a lot of, with the Concord Prison Outreach program, someone like Jean Bell, as a person you might be worth interviewing, Jean was instrumental in getting that going and keeping it going for years. She sort of retired from that, and then she and another group got involved with something called C4RJ, is for the Committees for Restorative Justice. You know, so there's been a real effort to work with prison populations, restorative justice, the idea of in some way that the victim and the perp work together, the perpetrator works to try and pay back in some socially acceptable fashion the wrong he's done. So that's something that Jean Bell, Jean is a person, you know, I would suggest you might talk to. She's done amazing things for this community. Town has a lot of little quiet heroes, and she's one of them. But in the answer to your question, I really don't know about, you know, what we do. I would assume yes, though. Another thing that, thinking back about Nancy Nelson, and one of the things that are big in Concord right now that seems to be getting going is this whole idea of slow food and organic farming. And there's a real effort by the park and some area folks to promote, you know, locally grown food production. So we have a couple well-known organic farmers, Vero Farms and the Hutchins Farm, but there is an effort on the part of the Park Service to try and get others to use its land to grow organically and locally and then sell the produce. I mean, just not to make money, really, but as much just to remind the world how food is grown and consumed healthily, and it can be done locally, and you don't have to get your, you know...
So that's a conscious goal of the Park Service?
Yeah, it really... This Nancy, she has really worked hard with to try and get it going, and there are some... With volunteers here in the community, people interested in the same thing, doing that. And last year, I didn't get to go, but I'm definitely going to go this year. There's something called the Stone Soup Dinner, and it's a... we sell tickets, and they have the dinner at the Park Service, but it's all locally grown produce and produced by area chefs. It's not a fundraiser. It's just kind of a celebration of homegrown cooking. And I think they have like 300 people. They put a big tent. It's quite an event. You know, so that, I guess there's always something going on here in Concord. I mean, I think they're always trying something new and different, and the getting back to the land has been something that it isn't just Alice Water at Chez Panisse in Berkeley, California. I mean, Concord's trying it too.
That's great. I love this whole food thing.
Well, it reminds, you know, when I was saying
local
that
local food.
I mean, it is harder. We are New England, and it is hard. We've had the worst summer. If you are trying to grow a pepper, forget it. It's rotten.
Mention tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. On the other hand, you know, you can do it, and there are certain crops obviously grow better than others, but I'm just reminded when I was a little girl living in Southern California, my mom would just give me, you know, some quarters and send me down to the corner where there was a farm stand and they grow corn and tomatoes and fresh everything, and I just, you know, I assume that's how everybody always ate. And so that has changed so much, and I'm glad that we're getting back to the idea of eat locally. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because we have the container truck or tanker ships or whatever that they can ship in 24 hours your bananas from Honduras or whatever. I know, I guess you still have to get bananas someplace else. They'd never grow here, but anyway, the idea, obviously, it's got merit.
Have you followed Barbara Kingsolver's work on
it? Not that much. I have read a couple of her books. Yeah, I know that she...
Yeah, she's big on it.
Yeah. Yeah, there... there's a woman here in Concord who's, I think, produced a sort of a local film or something about it, to promote or get more people to do it. There's a community gardens here in Concord that a very good friend of mine and her friend have kind of coordinated for years. I tried last year. I am not a good vegetable gardener. I tried, and I have to say I had a miserable year. I'm better growing flowers. She grows. Just amazing. There's some amazing it's land across from our courthouse where all this the community gardens are here. That woman, Rebecca Purcell, she's someone you should interview.
Purcell.
Rebecca Sheehan Purcell. Leslie knows her very well. She's a former head of the Friends. She's been involved with everything. Everything. She's a former Most Honored Citizen. I take great pride. I got her involved with the library, so that was one institution she hadn't had anything to do with until I introduced her and got her involved with the Friends. But she's been on every, run every committee, everything. So she's someone you need to have come talk. I'm running out of gas here.
Are you?
Well, I don't know what else you want me to talk about. It's just that I love the town.
It touched a lot of bases that nobody else has.
Well, there are so many, because I'm not the right person to talk to about it, but I can tell you areas that I think you need to explore. I mean, I think, and Rebecca can too. She moved here in 1973, and has been involved with the Concord Players. That's another fun organization, 51 Walden. That's our performing arts center. My husband used to tease because he'd say that, the financial district right down from the theater district, it's a quarter of a block. That's all it is, Walden Street. But that's a good group of people, the 51 Walden, and their efforts to, they're the site for the Concord Orchestra and the Concord Band. What else is there in Concord?
What's the history of that organization? Have they been around for a while?
I think so. Rebecca could tell you a little bit more about that, or her brother-in-law, Fritz Kusen, who has performed in it, would know a lot. Fritz also is a member of the Pratt family, who's an original from the Orchard House days.
Do you spell
Kusin? Kussin. Fritz is another person. His family would be good to interview. His store, this direction, I guess, it's now called Fritz and Gigi's. It's a kids' clothing store he's had for many, 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 many years. His two daughters run it now. But he could tell you a lot about Orchard House as well as the Faux Pack. There are other people who know more about that as well. Rebecca, you sort of have to ask Rebecca. I buy tickets and go see it, but it's just another organization in the community that gives richness to Concord, that, it has its own orchestra, its band, its own prison. We have a lot here, Concord.
What sorts of plays? What are some of the outstanding productions that you've seen?
Well, I mean, they every 10 years they produce Little Women, which is sort of fun. But they, every year they do, they'll do a musical and some serious drama. It's amateur, but it's fun, and it engages a lot of the people. And some folks get very involved with producing for 3 or 4 years, and then they get tired of the late nights. Or they recently did the Mikado. All kinds, really, all kinds. I don't know who the current director is there, but, it'd be sort of fun to talk to somebody about it. Rebecca could, kind of steer you in that direction. I don't know. It's just one of the institutions there. Other people that you... Annabelle Shepherd is somebody that you might be interested to talk to. She turns 90 in another week or so. She is a was head of the library. She's a former selectman. We had her 90th birthday party here. She's a very close friend of mine and Rebecca's and Barbara Powell's, but is a unique, really represents sort of the Concord can-do kind of person. I think in her 60s, she went back and got her MBA, and then she ran for selectman. She's amazing and remembers a lot, even though she's 90. Other people, I don't know who all the different subjects of the oral history program are. So she actually may have been interviewed before. Actually, think about that. She may have. Ask me something else.
This has been great. Thank you.
I mean, my recollections are so fuzzy. it's just I've had the fortune of being able to work with a lot of different organizations in kind of trying to make something happen. I wouldn't say, and it wasn't necessarily the driving force, but I was certainly along for the ride and maybe put in my oar every now and then to make it happen. But I think that's what being a good citizen of a small town or any town. But at least you can hear in a small town, you have more of an opportunity to be have a larger role than you would if you're in Boston.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. Well, when I came east, actually, what brought me east, as I said, was an adventure, and I lived in a rooming house. But my first job was to work for the mayor, Mayor White, which is pretty extraordinary. I mean, it was really luck that I got that position, but I was there at a truly remarkable time. It was 1974 during busing, and some of his staff people, Barney Frank, who is quite famous now, is a congressman in the banking committee. He heads the banking committee, right? An amazing man, brilliant. And, while I was there, I met the Queen of England, I met Jimmy Carter, I met Ronald Reagan, and here, just like a kid from Colorado. It was pretty heady stuff, but I did learn politics is pretty ugly and pretty corrupt, and I didn't think I could stay in it. But sure was a great, eyewitness to a lot of interesting stuff.
But in a town this size, there's more, accountability or less opportunity?
Well, I don't think there's as much at stake. There's not as much money to be made to be corrupt in the selectmen. I doubt, we might have a corrupt selectman, but I've never heard of one. There's a lot of money at stake in downtown Boston. It's an international city, and politics are an industry in Boston and have been for a long time, and they had some remarkable the number of people that I saw there who went on, if they didn't become an elected official, became very involved with political campaigns. I think it's in the water in Dorchester, this remarkable city. So that, if you read the book The Last Hurrah, it was dated somewhat, but not all that much. If you go out, I used to go out with the mayor to some of these house gatherings where he would be talking to the community and the precinct captains, and it's all about politics and getting out the vote and drumming up friends and doing favors, and all the stuff you read from The Last Hurrah still goes on. And Menino, who is the current mayor, may be Italian, but he's still doing the same thing. So I just don't think it conquered. I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of corruption here, but I don't think so. I think you'd know. You're right. I think you'd know. And if it is, it's smaller dollar figures, I hope. I mean, I don't think there's.
Well, all I can say is Concord is lucky to have had you.
Well, I feel that, I hope that I hope I can continue to help and be productive. It worries me from time to time. When I was president of the library, I really had a vision about what I thought this project should be and how we should run it. And when you're in charge of something, you can do that. I'm not in charge. I have not on the head of a board or anything like that right now. So it's a little bit harder. You got to work as a team. Sometimes that's, I'd like putting the team together. It's a little bit more, you know, you can run the show. I don't know, you might ask somebody if I ran it very well, but I think we had a good time and we had a good outcome, so.
That's what counts. Well, thank you very much for coming today.
Well, it's a pleasure. Terrific. You know, I do hope you talk to some of these people like Rebecca, Nancy, Barbara, definitely Barbara.
Yeah. Well, Leslie's the one who hands us the list.
Yeah, she does. Well, Barbara can't do it until she's retired, I suppose, and Leslie herself.
No, we've done Barbara.
Well, you have done Barbara. You could do her again and still earn more.
Oh, I'm sure.